just joined us, you're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, with me, Sharad Kutan. We turn our attention now to Singapore, which has just confirmed 1,016 new COVID-19 cases today. This is the third consecutive day that Singapore has reported more than 1,000 new cases in a day. The vast majority of new cases are work permit holders residing in foreign worker dormitories. Now, up to just about a couple of weeks ago, Singapore was held up as a model of success in pandemic management. However, now critics are saying that Singapore's low-wage migrant worker population has been systematically excluded from the public health response. Joining us on the line now to tell us more about the situation in Singapore is Alex Au, Vice President of rights group Transient Workers Count 2, or TWC2. Alex, good evening. Thank you for coming on the show tonight. Now, do you think were foreign workers overlooked in Singapore, in the Singapore government's COVID-19 response, Alex?
We certainly think so. I think they were very badly overlooked. It is not entirely surprising from the way Singapore treats migrant workers generally, but in this case, it has come with disastrous consequences.
What kind of consequences?
Well, you see, like, for example, you just mentioned the figure that there were 1,000 and 1,016 cases just announced today, right? Now, of these 1,016 cases, I think less than 20 were Singaporeans, and about 1,000 cases were migrant workers living in the dormitories primarily. So if not for the problem of the migrant workers, Singapore would be, you know, considered quite a success story still. But because we were so blind to the risk faced by the vulnerable community, that is the migrant worker, now we have a really, really huge problem on our hands.
Alex, could you help us understand what percentage of foreign workers of the in that low-wage category actually live in these dormitories, said to be quite cramped, packed with lots of people, but clearly designed to manage people or to restrict movement of this population?
Out of the 1 million low-wage workers in Singapore, what we call the work permit holders, many of them would be domestic workers, and others would be Malaysians, you know, who might come across the causeway. But there are about 300,000 who live in dormitories. And what is a dormitory? I need to kind of like paint a picture. It's a massive housing complex behind barbed wire fences with securities and security guards and surveillance cameras and all that. And yes, you are absolutely right. The men are housed in that, and they're almost all men, housed in there at 10, 15, or 20 people to a room, double-decker beds. The beds are maybe 1 meter apart, shared toilets, shared bathrooms, maybe 10 persons to a toilet. Really abysmal conditions and perfect for infection to spread.
So you're saying, Alex, that social distancing cannot be observed in these types of conditions?
Our organization, TWC2, has said that from the very beginning of this epidemic. We kind of like said, watch out, okay? All this rhetoric about social distancing, stay at home, it's safe, work from home, and all that kind of thing is meaningless when we're dealing with a community whose home means 20 people squeezed into a room. And, you know, what do you mean by social distancing? And worst of all, when the virus cases began to climb, they got stricter and stricter about not allowing workers to leave these dormitories. In other words, they had to spend more and more of their free time in the dormitories. Finally, the dormitories are quarantined, and they are told to stay in the room 22 out of 24 hours every day.
Oh.
Now, that is almost the exact opposite of social distancing. It's like a prison. And, no wonder the infection rate have gone up the way they have.
Alex, could you just clarify? I'm wondering how the lockdown, or what the Singapore government calls the circuit breaker strategy, applied differently to migrant workers in the dorms and versus, say, to Singaporeans at home.
Well, for the Singaporeans generally, I guess it's pretty similar to Malaysia's situation right now, which is that we are supposed to work from home, we are not supposed to go to the office. But generally, there is no particular restriction about going out and taking a walk or walking your dog or that kind of thing, so long as you do it alone, and not in any social company. So there's still a sense of freedom, but of course, a lot of people are staying indoors. The roads are pretty empty, the buses are empty, trains are empty, but they are running. For the migrant workers in the dormitories, however, the dormitory imposes rather strict rules about who can enter and who can leave. And within the dormitories, they have internal company management that says when you can leave your room and when you can come downstairs. And many of these dormitories are also put under official quarantine by the government. So that really means that besides the dormitory management's rules, there are also the government rules, which are very, very, very strict.
Alex, also, you know, one of the comments that's come out of people who are trying to defend the Singapore government's policies is that the high numbers that are being comes out of the high level of testing that's actually being done. So you have a lot of positives in these dormitories because of a universal testing within the dormitories. Doesn't really mean that people are getting sick, but do you understand where the testing or the targeted testing might actually be raising numbers and perhaps creating a specter around these dormitories that is undeserved?
No, actually, quite the opposite. I would contest that view. We have also been monitoring testing numbers. And frankly, in my view, testing numbers are nothing to boast about. They are actually rather low considering the number of cases we have. The number of cases are coming up not because they're being tested, but because they're symptomatic. So they are reporting fevers. They're certainly encouraged to report as soon as possible that once they have a cough or a fever. So yes, they are catching them as soon as they become symptomatic. Not because we are testing the huge migrant population in any widespread manner. But the danger with just waiting until symptoms appear and then counting it as a case is that we know by now there are such things as asymptomatic cases
right.
who are also infectious. Mm. So really, I think the situation is pretty out of control, in my opinion.
Right. Alex, can I ask you about public sentiment? Is there public sympathy for the plight of foreigners?
I'm glad to report that on the whole, we have had a surge of support in the kind of work, and lots of people have been voicing out that the previous conditions or the present conditions are quite unacceptable and very, very embarrassing, including very senior people in the establishment, but not exactly the political leaders themselves. They have to follow the script, no doubt. But at the same time, unfortunately, we also have a xenophobic strain in Singapore, and there are some people saying rather nasty, racist things. Fortunately, I think they're a small minority opinion.
Alex, very quickly, these dormitories were established long before the COVID crisis. What animated or what was the impetus for those dormitories? Will this crisis undo that? Will there be a major rethink about these massive dormitories for foreign workers?
Well, actually, I mean, to be fair, the dormitories represented a net improvement in their housing conditions as the dormitories came into view maybe about 10 years ago, 12 years ago, that kind of thing. Because before that, the migrant workers were living here and there in shared rooms and shared apartments. And, of course, they wanted to save money. So, they really crammed themselves even tighter in those very unhygienic places. So in a sense, the dormitories were built in order to give them slightly better accommodation, but as we now know, slightly better is not good enough. So that's one. Moving forward, I think we have noted the Minister for Manpower's statement that once the crisis is over, we really must look at the standards that we apply to dormitories. So I'm hopeful about further improvement in the housing conditions, but I think that this is only one aspect of Singapore's mistreatment of migrant workers. There are also such issues as abysmally low salaries, difficulty in accessing medical care, salary injustices, and so forth. And I'm not sure that COVID-19 is the motivation to fix those other problems, which are just as great in normal times.
Understood. Alex, thank you so much for speaking with us this evening. Keep up the
thank
good
you.
Work. All the best to you over there and your team. Now we're going to take a quick break. More on this topic in just a few minutes, so stay tuned to Consider This.